have a just a quick comment. Thank you, Russ. Because it occurred listening to you that this Leonine template might go some distance toward explaining this recurring theme today of this feeling that there's not only something very wrong, but also that there's something new about what's very wrong. And what occurred listening to you is it concerns that relationship between the polity and the domestic. If you look at the dialectic there these days, what's happened is that the sexual revolution has given rise to the need for the state to intervene, or the felt need for somebody to intervene. And simultaneously, that act of intervention has made it possible to bankroll more fracturing of the family. So what's going on isn't just that these three spheres are sort of, you know, out of balance or out of whack. What's going on is something new, which is that this horrible hybrid has been created between them as the state steps in to be the absent father. And that might be just one way of clarifying where we are. Thank you.
Well, I think that's good because it allows for the possibility that even perverse institutional logics are imitating something that's not perverse. That just as we know that when there's pauperization of wage labor, someone needs to step in. I mean, it's something that needs to be corrected, rebalanced. And since this has to do with orders of justice, the polity's gonna have something to do with this, maybe civil society. So in a perverse way, the sexual revolution, which is made possible by a reduction of social forms, really to consent. It really, I mean, that's what it's all about, armed with technology. When it goes bad, we naturally, so to speak, expect another power or another sector of society to step in to remediate it. And of course it can do great damage.
Especially if it's... Yeah. If it's intervening where it doesn't belong.
Right.
I mean, certainly Leo would have thought that that the family needs to remain independent of the state. Its interior life needs to be. So the idea of this highly elaborated family law that we have in our time, which is an indication of exactly your point, Mary, people feel like to become dysfunctional, we have to intervene to protect people. So family actually becomes a zone of danger for people. Some ideologues see it as a kind of threat to the free independence of women, but even people who are, you know, pro-family recognize that for many people their experience of family is actually quite dangerous. I'd like to just use a few minutes here at the end to pull together some thoughts just about the different speakers who, I mean, what a fantastic afternoon, and I certainly want to thank the Thomistic Institute for pulling together such a rich group of speakers to address what I think is on all of our minds. We all feel, I think, pretty acutely that we're at a kind of junction point, both as a nation and also as Christians in our society. We feel that the terrain underneath us has changed quite dramatically and very quickly. Some folks have spoken, the speakers, about gay marriage and so forth and how rapid that transformation is. It's just one of many things. Russ pointed out the way in which the global economic system, which was always there, has become an urgent matter and has precipitated not a crisis, certainly I think we know that with Sanders and Trump. It's really the global economic system that is driving a great deal of the distemper in our political system. But I want to sort of make a couple observations. One thing is, I think Michael Hanby made a very important observation, which is the tendency for us to instrumentalize our faith or our thinking or our insights in order to meet a crisis. And there we are facing many, many crises. But I think it's imperative for us to really step back from the mentality of crisis. You know, the election's going to come up. We're going to get lots of people telling us that it's a Supreme Court justice appointment, crisis, crisis, crisis. We have to do this. We have to say that. And I think, you know, I really feel strongly that although we have profound duties as citizens, and we need to discharge those duties, that we need to reserve for ourselves space to think and to pray and to, you know, continue our lives in a way that's outside of this atmosphere of perpetual crisis, which I think often leads us to be manipulated in the public sphere. So let's think about that when we're faced with the rhetoric of crisis. Second thing is really thinking about George Weigel's comments. It strikes me that, and then also Philip Munoz, it strikes me that Catholicism in America has a dual character. On the one hand, it's really part of our DNA to be on the outside. George mentioned that the last time there was kind of a material persecution of Catholics was in the late 19th century. Nevertheless, a certain kind of spirit of exclusion certainly characterized the Catholic experience up until World War II and in some ways, in some small way, in the 1950s. So I think we have in our, and we certainly have as a part of our mythology as American Catholics, to be on the outside, although it's certainly not been true for the last two generations. So I think I see that as a very valuable resource going forward, as we are pushed to the margins of our society by the secular progressive project, that we can actually be there, you know, and we can thrive there. On the outside. So that's one part of our DNA. The other part of our DNA is what Father Thomas Joseph spoke of as the kind of spirit of concordat. And I think Russ Hittinger pointed out that the Leonine project was to save the institutions. And I think my reading of Gaudium et Spes, there's a strong element to sort of that the church coming off of the post-war experience, where it did play an instrumental role in rebuilding the institutions of Europe, sees the church as working in partnership to save the institutions. And so that encourages us in a kind of spirit of, if you will, closeness to our political moment, our social moment, and our cultural moment to help and try to save what can be saved. But it may be the case, and I think Michael Hamby made the argument that it is the case, and it could be that Pope Francis discerns that it's the case, that the hour is late, and that these institutions are collapsing, and that as we try to draw close to them, we can be very deeply compromised in their fragmented and collapsed form. So we have that two sides of our DNA. We can, you know, mythology on the outside, but we have a strong tradition of trying to move to the center, if you will, in order to nurture and renew these institutions in our society. And I think I worry that Michael Hamby's right, in which case you don't want to be seen as part of the coalition that is propping up an institution that's lost credibility in the West. I think it's especially true, probably in the political arena. You have to be very careful there. But I think, just in general, it really came out, I think, in the last two talks. It's my conviction that we are in a time of a crisis of permanence in the West. It certainly has something to do with this global capitalist system, which is a very liquefying system. It's a system that's profoundly dynamic, which is a very fruitful thing. But the very dynamism itself often overruns and steamrolls a great deal of the permanent things of society. So it's a kind of crisis of stability. It's a crisis of solidarity, or to use Michael Hamby's language, it's a crisis of substance in our time. And I think we need to really get our minds around that. we as Americans are very much trained to believe that all social crises are crises of freedom. And that's true on the right, and that's true on the left. That we, you know, if a progressive upper middle class journalist goes, as one recently did, I forgot her name, and finds out that adolescent girls are in a very painful and difficult sort of social situation with texting lewd images of themselves in order to try to maintain their social status with the boys. I mean, I read her piece, and her piece was, the prescription is the sexual revolution hasn't gone far enough. We need to be more explicit about sex. We need to be more open about sex. We need to be more affirming of sex. And that this is a kind of, the perversions all stem from not enough freedom. So I think you, everybody in this room sort of thinks, that's kind of crazy. But at the same time, I think on the right, if we face economic problems and difficulties, then the problem is we haven't gone far enough in promoting economic freedom. And so in both cases, I think we have a political culture in America that is very, very strongly inclined to diagnose all problems as a problem of freedom. When I think both Michael Hanby and I think also Russ Hittinger, the suggestion is that really our time is not a crisis of freedom. We've had a lot of that medicine in the West for the last 200 years, especially the last 60 years. We have a lot of medicine of that medicine, and it could be that that we've reached a certain point where that's our problem. That doesn't mean that I think we need to be opposed to freedom. On the contrary, it's my conviction, and I think it's the conviction that Phil Munoz, I think, was arguing for in the first lecture, that culture of freedom requires a people capable of self-governance must be a people of virtue. Or put in my language, that the only way that you can have true freedom is if you have a stable place to stand. It was said of the Spartans that they were the freest of people because they had the power to say no. They had the power to say no. And part of our problem today is that we feel so vulnerable to, things have so dissolved around us that we feel so vulnerable that we are very easily suborned by the worldly powers that course through our society without much resistance from historic institutions that used to provide us with firm places to stand. It seems to me that in universities, the notion of safe spaces or the need for safe spaces is a very strong testimony that even wealthy kids or kids from wealthy families that are very accomplished and are on their way towards some place in the new technocracy, nevertheless feel so vulnerable that they're asking for safe spaces. That's a pretty clear indication, I think, of the fact that we are living in a kind of crisis of permanence, and that they are, I mean, what could be more of a greater sign of a lack of freedom than that having to need a safe space? I mean, presumably freedom would be the ability to actually venture, and venture even difficult things, rather than having to huddle among the like-minded, which has become so much a part of our culture, reinforced by social media, that we huddle together among the like-minded. So it just strikes me that my instinct here, I think Michael Hanby very powerfully ended with a call to reconnect with the real, to reconnect with the real. And I think that that really, I think, Russ Hittinger's observation about Pope Francis's sort of groping in the dark with respect to the global capitalism, that he has his own instincts about words like accompaniment really are kind of call to connect with what's really happening, and then you may have some hope of actually having some insights into what's actually going on. And I think that that's a powerful point. But my instinct is that, and this is funny for a guy who runs a magazine on religion, culture, and public life, but my instinct is that public life is now almost entirely captive to the dissolving forces. This doesn't mean that people shouldn't vote, or people shouldn't run for public office, or that any people in this room shouldn't put their shoulder to the task of trying to do what needs to be done in American public life. But my sense is that public institutions, not just political ones, but the civil society in America is so deeply weakened that and it's very tempting to become complicitous with the weakening forces in order to participate in them. And this is one of my concerns about Pope Francis. I worry that his instinct, movement rather than institution, that actually contributes to the anti-institutional mentality of our time. But it could be that there's just one has to. But public life is a deeply problematic area for us, and so my instinct is that we need to focus on family and church when it comes to the three societies that Leo identified. That we really cannot renew the polity unless we renew family and church, because people cannot be free enough, if you will, to resist the dissolving tendencies in public matters unless they have a stable place to stand. And I think that most people's experience of permanence is family. And it's funny that even though our marriage culture is in bad shape, especially among poorer people, they still want to get married. And nobody wants to make conditional vows. And so the lure of permanence is still quite powerful in our society, kind of testimony to how deep human need is for being rooted in matters of substance. So I think family, and then people's intergenerational loyalties, even in these deeply fragmented families, I'm the step this of this, that even in these deeply fragmented families, there's still this impulse of loyalty. And I think this needs to be encouraged, and we need to double down on the permanence of marriage, and we need to find. I mean, I think that our most important political project should be to find a way to be pro-marriage in the post-Obergefell world. I think that's a hugely important thing to do, and then church, and I think I want to second Michael Hanby's point that the freedom of the church is not, at the end of the day, a legal freedom. Freedom of the church is really the depth of our loyalty to the church, such that we refuse to be moved. And then, in that sense, I share George Weigel's kind of double-mindedness about the current case. There's a part of me that would like to sort of see let the world see that there are people who will not be suborned. Although, of course, I don't wish upon anyone these difficult decisions that a decision the wrong way would go. So that's my sense of today. And I'm deeply, deeply grateful to the speakers for providing really extraordinarily rich lectures in a moment, 2016. It's not a moment that's going to pass quickly, I'm afraid. But in a moment where we are going to have to try to navigate forward in a rapidly changing political, public circumstances in American society, and not just American society, but obviously in the West more broadly. So please join me again in thanking all of our speakers.